You're listening to U Talk, part of the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Providing unbiased opinions on all things Utah football and basketball.
Welcome to this edition of the U Talk podcast. This is Grant Bagby from Torn by Sports. Joining me as always is Joseph.
Hi, everybody.
Joseph is at, let's see here, Pac-12blog.com and Ute Nation, the Rivals Network affiliate for all your recruiting coverage and all of Utah Ute coverage as well. We're on a quick schedule today with all kinds of things. No one has yet donated enough for us to quit our day jobs, but so let's get straight into it. Luckily, our review of the Pac-12 is going to be a short one.
Yes.
Since all we had...
There's no games. Just the title.
Except for the title game, which, I don't know. What do you think of the title game? I mean, for those who don't know, USC won.
It was good. It was a fun game. I really enjoyed watching it. I thought Bryce Love made his case. The performance he's had on one leg for the second half of the year is unbelievable. I think he's certainly deserving of his Heisman finalist invite. He'll be, I think, the fifth runner-up because the Oklahoma kid's going to win. But he'll be the fifth runner-up for Stanford in the last 9 years, which I think is interesting. They've gotten a lot of second-place finishes in the Heisman race. And it was a great game. It was really fun to watch. I think probably the better team won, and the USC is the best team in the conference this year, and the right pick to represent. Although I think maybe a little bit disappointing based on the numbers that I had for them. They suggested there was no reason they should lose more than one game. But I still think a good year, and we wound up with a couple teams and. I believe a couple teams in New Year's Six Bowls, maybe this one. But, yeah, it was fun. It's always fun, and I look forward to seeing the youth in that game next year.
Yeah, hopefully that is hopefully that's what happened, but let's control our expectations a little bit too much.
Nope, I'm not controlling my expectations. I'm going
no.
full 1280 radio host here. Heisman for Huntley and a playoff berth for the Utes.
Oh wow, you stopped yourself though. You didn't go national title.
I'm in. Well, see now you're pushing me. You're pushing me. no national title guarantee. That I'm only going to guarantee the playoff berth.
Well, all right. Suddenly go to Vegas if they have odds already. You know, send the bill to Mr. Joseph Silverswig. He's got you covered. All right. Well, let's go on to one of my favorite segments we're doing is our Kyle Kuzma watch.
Oh, yes. Kuz control
and he,
over there in L.A.
You know, he is in Kuz control. I mean, just look at his last, you know, he didn't play against the Warriors. But then he plays two, you know, back-to-back Nuggets versus Rockets. He goes from, you know, 13 points, followed up with a 22-point. I mean, he's having double-doubles. And the kid is insane. Still averaging.
There's two double-doubles in a row.
Yeah, I mean, he's averaging 30 minutes. Still, I mean, if he can get his rebound numbers up for the next few games, keep that double-digit, he could average a double-double. For the season, which would be really impressive for a rookie, in my opinion.
He's pushing pretty close to that line. My guess is he won't get there. He's at 6.5 rebounds per game right now.
Yeah.
But
he's just going to stop these two and three rebound nights, and he could have it. But,
that's the issue is when he's just not getting there. The Lakers, on the other hand, are not doing so great, which I'm sure will make a lot of our listeners happy. They've lost five in a row. Despite the great efforts of their chosen scion here, but I imagine you guys don't mind the Lakers being 8-15, so you don't mind, I don't mind.
Lose away. All right, our other quick hitter was the playoff committee's choice to put Alabama in over Ohio State and USC. What do you think, Joseph?
It just highlights the way that the committee has made their recommendations so flexible that they can just do whatever they want and then say, well, we were considering this other criteria that we didn't tell you about last year that kind of became more important this time. And it's just silly. And the reality is that the college football playoff, just like the BCS championship game, was a meaningless invitational tournament. And the only reason that we think it's super important is because they're the last games that happen all year. And we're really sad that football is going away. So we watch them and we care. And the teams are really good. So the games are usually pretty good, although not always and not historically here at the playoff. And what's missing is a sense of purpose to what's transpired before and a sense of a team or a football program being able to understand what do I need to do to get to the playoff. Because if USC had scheduled Mercer instead of Notre Dame, like Alabama did, they're in the playoff. Ohio State had scheduled Mercer instead of Oklahoma, like Alabama did, they're in the playoff. And that's a terrible precedent to set. And I think the only thing that you can do is to say, we are just going to put in the conference champions because then it's exciting and it matters. And that 6-6 or 8-4 team that squeaks into the other side of these conference matchups, everybody wouldn't be rooting against them. It would be an exciting game, and you'd kind of want the underdog story to go ahead. And I think that the media story you hear is, well, everybody loves the controversy. And I don't think everybody does love the controversy. I think guys in the media love the controversy because it's really, really easy to talk about. You can regurgitate the exact same, well, is it the best four teams or the best four resumes? And did you see the way they played against the team they lost to? Argument that you use every single year, and you don't actually have to do your job, which is watch these games, think about these teams, and tell their stories to people. I mean, that's what people want, is the stories. And this is a great way of filling 24 hours news coverage for 2 weeks without ever telling the story of Sam Darnold or Baker Mayfield or anybody. It's just, you know, it's easy to BS and kind of phone in these takes about Alabama, OSU, USC instead of saying, well, let's just let them in and see how they play and look at the games and have fun with them.
Yeah, I mean, here's my playoff take is, and we went from BCS, which was bad, to playoff, which is a little bit better. But it's
better, right? Four is better than two.
Right. But they've got to extend it. Like, until you put it, like, I am a strong believer in eight teams. Like, I'm sorry. It's FBS, if I've got this right, or is it FCS? I get it confused. But if, like,
FBS,
Weber State and all these. Okay, so if FBS can go. Yeah, if they can go through and have this big, you know, tournament playoff do that, there is no reason why, in my opinion, Division I FCS schools cannot have an 18 playoff. Like, seriously, we're talking about a couple extra games. Like, school out, like, let these kids play, make their, you know, giveaways at each round of the playoffs better so they're, you know, incentivize the coaches to get bigger playoff bonuses and just make it eight teams and do it the right way. Like, it's just, it's ridiculous. It should easily, look, make it, you know, every conference title champion's in, make it, you know, you get one of the G5 schools is automatically in, and then make, you know, then by golly, fine, let the SEC have another school. Like, I could care less. But get every conference champ should be in the playoff and have a chance at the national title. Like, that, it's just wrong that they're not in there.
Just wrong. It's just wrong. And I think the thing that people miss, And that people miss about a lot of this stuff is college football is a super chaotic system. And wins and losses are an incredibly granular sort of output from that system. And using that to judge who the four best out of 130-some-odd teams are is just incredibly difficult.
It's ridiculous.
And you're probably wrong. You're probably
they are wrong.
Some team that is better than these other four teams. I mean, there's 6 to 8 options down who lost a couple of extra games, down from 5 to 12 or so, that could actually be better than everybody in the playoff. And we just don't know it because they had an injury at the wrong time or a ball bounced the wrong way. I mean, there's a million different reasons why teams lose games that they shouldn't lose and even lose them really, really badly. And so what we have to accept is, since we can't tell who the best teams are, we should try and get everybody who has a legitimate argument for maybe being the best team, even at the outside edges, and let them play. Just let them play, and it doesn't make any sense not to.
The other part of it for me, though, as a fan watching these games, is I want, like you mentioned, like I want underdogs in there. Like, heck, USC would, it's crazy saying this, but USC would be considered an underdog going into the playoff, right? I want that. I wanted to think about, you know, the little Giants 1 in 100 times that you're going to win. And, like, that exists, and it's just, I don't know. I can talk about this.
You win games in football that you're not supposed to win. That's not like basketball with you know, 140 possessions and one is never going to. 16. If you lined up UCF against the top 10 teams, they'd win a couple of those games. And there's no telling whether, you know, the one that they'd win would be the 1 versus 8 seed in the playoff. And you've got UCF takes down Alabama and that would, I mean, or whoever, or Oregon or Clemson or whoever it happens to be. And that would be so awesome. I mean, that would be so exciting. And
well, think about what's go back
and
to the BCS era.
I do understand the reason to deprive those schools of that opportunity is the big guys run the show and the big guys think they're clearly better than everybody else and they don't want anybody else involved and that's how they like the system. But it's ridiculous and it's demonstrably incorrect and inaccurate and not achieving the objective of having the most entertaining football product and the opportunity for teams to prove that they're the best in the country. It doesn't do either of those things.
Nope. All right, let's move on. We both agree. 4 teams is not enough. Get on with it, playoff people.
8, 10, 12, something. Okay, West Virginia.
Apparently we're playing in our bowl game.
Yeah, we are playing a 7-5 Big 12 team in a bowl game that we rolled into at the last minute because there were, 9 eligible teams in the Pac-12 for bowl games. And I continue to grow in this feeling that the Pac-12 commissioner has sort of outlived his ability to improve sort of his term limit, right? So it's not exactly that he's done a bad job or that he's terrible. I'm not in that camp. But just that a new person with a fresh approach and a new perspective and a new negotiating structure
perspective
is going to be able to get it's going to be able to get better deals for the Pac-12 moving forward. I think this is the best bowl game Utah has had in terms of opponent since. Since they joined the Pac-12, and that's crazy. You know, Utah's had seasons where they finish ranked. I mean, the last 3 bowl games they've won, and then they went into the bowl game ranked. And It's crazy that they're 6-6 season. They're getting a bowl game that's more money, I think, and more exciting and more interesting. And this is, I mean, we're not going to break down the game today. We've got time to do that later. But it should be a great game. West Virginia is a cool team. They're fun to watch. They've got terrible defense, so Utah's gonna you know have a lot. It's gonna be a lot of fun to watch the Utah offense work. And I think it's just time for Commissioner Scott to kind of take a step back and let somebody else see what they can do with this thing in the sort of next phase of being the Pac-12. I think he did a really good job turning the 10 into the 12, but it's probably time for somebody else.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thing. I think more people, outside of bowl ties, I think the more reason to be pissed off with Larry Scott is what's going on with the TV coverage. I mean, the fact that the Pac-12 network is only available... It's not available on DirecTV, and it's only available on Sling as far as streaming products when there's like 6 of them out there. Like, there's some serious issues with TV coverage. I think that's more of a reason to say he needs to be fired or step away than the bull pies.
It matters to me that there's 2 games that I didn't get to watch the entirety of because NASCAR Truck Series was on for 45 minutes. And that's, you know, you can kind of throw up your hands and say, well, those are the contracts. But I'm a lawyer. Contracts are negotiated. And you think about these things as you go in. And these guys have huge teams of attorneys who deal with this kind of stuff all the time. And they know that these problems come up and they know that they're problems. And if they don't know that they're problems, they need better lawyers. And so to sort of abdicate responsibility for the way that these things have gone and just say our hands are tied, well, no, you're just not negotiating right. You can win these negotiations. You just have to do it right. And I think they launched into the DirecTV with the negotiations with a really arrogant approach that was, you guys are going to so regret not signing us that you're going to come crawling back, and they didn't. And they should
well,
recognize that, and that was a misjudge. I mean, I don't want to get too wonky on you here. This is sort of my profession, but they really mishandled a lot of negotiations. And again, that's okay. You're not going to win every negotiation, but putting in a new person to renegotiate those agreements gives you another crack at it. Whereas Commissioner Scott can't go back to that drawing board anymore. Commissioner Bagby can.
That'd be a darn good commissioner.
And you can say, you know, let's
Commissioner Bagby does. My first action as Commissioner Bagby would be to make it to where hashtag Pac-12 rest no longer exists.
And that's a huge thing, and they haven't done a good job of it. Although I think, I honestly think a lot of that is sort of viral social media. That is, once they've developed that reputation, it's really hard to shake because every time they screw up and every ref screws up every game, it's really going to stand out. But I think that there's also quite a bit of truth to it and that they need to change.
It can't be as big as it is if there's not truth behind it. Like,
yeah. And I think that they need to take an approach that frankly involves funding, referees in a different way and holding them accountable for getting it right. That puts a little bit, but it invests some money into solving the problem rather than just investing organizational resources. I have one more question about West Virginia. There's a few weeks of practice heading up. I've heard some people say Williams had such a good game against Colorado, and it's his senior season. This is his very last game, probably in any football uniform. He might play in Canada or something, but this is probably it for him. That he should start Utah's bowl game. What are your thoughts?
I don't care. Does Huntley care? I guess that's, look, Huntley's supposed to get in the Heisman next year, so whatever keeps him happy, I'm down with. But, like, only, like, I'm sorry, we're 6-16 going to a bowl game. Like, my interest level on whether it's Huntley or Williams is very minimal. Like, it just doesn't matter. The game doesn't matter. Like, I think, even, like, people who redshirted can play, if I remember right. Like, it's just like...
They ought to be. I don't know if they can or not. I think that's, like, a new rule they're going to try out, and they ought to be able to. It would be great to see, what's his name, Bryson, the wide receiver from Texas Tech. It'd be fun to see him.
Yeah, but, I mean, ultimately, that's my... I don't care. You know what? Fine, it's Williams' last game, probably, football uniform volumes, let the boy sling it around. But ultimately, if Huntley says, hey, I'm healthy, I want to play, tell him you play, you were going to play you like an NFL preseason game. You can go play like a few drives, maybe play the whole first quarter, but after that, we're going to let Williams finish out his senior season in a big hoorah, like, fine. Like, what, I mean, ultimately, I'm sorry, but unless it's the playoff or the conference title game, like, I don't, or maybe one of the big New Year's sticks, like the Cotton Bowl or some, otherwise, like, I'm sorry, a 6-6 versus 7-5 game, this game is irrelevant. Like, yes.
I apologize for that. I had a different take until you said that, but you know what? You're absolutely right. This is a fun opportunity, and it's a learning experience for these guys, and the practice is the most important thing from that perspective. It doesn't really matter who wins, despite, you know, fans will be apoplectic. If the game is lost, fans will be apoplectic about the quarterback situation regardless. They'll say, oh, well, obviously you should have started Williams, or obviously you should have started Huntley, or obviously you shouldn't have taken Huntley out after the first quarter. Whatever they did would obviously be the wrong thing if they lose, and it will obviously be the right thing if they win, which I think they're going to. Regardless of who starts, and so I
look, we'd better be West Virginia.
Convinced me. I have backed down off of Huntley Hill, and I'm convinced if they want to play Williams, if they want to take series or quarters or something like that, I think that's a great idea. Maybe first half for Huntley, second half for Williams, so that they both get some time, and Williams gets to take that knee at the end of the game as he finishes his football career.
Yep. There you go. I mean, ultimately, even fans shouldn't even be pissed. Like, only as long as the game's close and it's entertaining, great. Otherwise, I don't care. Let's talk about something else. How about some craziness in the coaching carousel that is Taggart, after a year, ditches Oregon? What do you think?
He's recruited athletes to three different programs in the last 365 days.
It's crazy.
Yes, it's pretty crazy. And he was adamant, and he tweeted some things that made it look like there was absolutely no way he was interviewing or leaving. And keep in mind, these interviews are weeks-long processes where you're sitting down with board members and interest holders and boosters and athletic directors, and your lawyers are meeting with their lawyers, and contracts are flying back and forth. It's a huge process just to get these jobs. There is no way that he wasn't just cold-bloodedly lying to his kids about it, and for no reason, because he knew he was going to take the job. And it's a really bad look, and it's shown, because I want to say six Oregon football commits have withdrawn their commitment since this news started to bubble up.
So here's my perspective. One, the dude's got, like, hold on a second, though. Like, Florida, the dude's Florida bound. Like, he's gonna go to Florida. Like, I believe he's from Florida. Either way, he's been spending the last little while of his life in
Florida.
He was going to go to Florida State, one. Two, like, these kids are smart enough, they're on social media enough, like, they're not stupid. Like, they had to have known that he was probably going to Florida State. I don't blame the recruits dropping on Taggart in the way he held things close to the vest and lied or whatever. That's just, he left Oregon, so the kids are decommitting. Like, what's the big deal? Like, the other thing about me is, like, this is the deal. Like, with football recruiting especially, like, I can only get so excited about these kids because they're one player out of, like, 22 people that play. Like, I'm sorry. Like, it's just, yeah. So, yeah, Oregon lost seven recruits. Guess what? Oregon was starting to recover by the end of the season. Depending on who they hire and everything, they'll probably recover. You know, it'll take them a year or two, and they'll be just fine. So, I mean, ultimately, does this move the needle for me? It just doesn't. It's kind of like what I said last week. I'm just not, if coaching changes, I don't care. There's one coaching position I'm interested in right now. And I guess multiple coaching positions I'm interested in. And they're only the ones associated with the Utah youths. Otherwise, I don't care. Like, as long as my coaches are putting in.
I feel bad for the seven kids he brought with him from Florida. There's seven kids in 2017 that he brought from Florida. And
well, but yeah, you can feel bad for them. I get that.
But that tells you. I mean, to
but that's their first team.
I'm sure the thousands of recruits listening to this podcast.
Thousands.
Don't
yep.
Go to a coach unless it's Kyle Whittingham. He is the only coach in the entire country who you know will be there in 4 years.
It's true. Yeah. Yeah.
And
I mean, that's,
like you have to be picking where you go based on something other than your relationship with that coach because they don't care.
Well, I mean,
and I think that what this Taggart situation highlighted was the degree to which they don't care because kids were calling him up. And they were saying, hey, is there any truth to this? And he was saying, no, absolutely not. I'm at Oregon for life. When he knew that
was. Yeah, but how much of that is he, like, contractually and all the different crap that legally binds these coaches, like, they're like, how is he, he's probably not even allowed to, like, legitimately say something that would hint them otherwise.
He's not allowed to lie.
So, I mean.
That's all down the road. Let's just talk about you and your football. That's, I mean, that's what you say. You
that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's
well,
back to Utah, though. You know, enough about Oregon and their coach.
Exactly.
I think is going to come up at T here. The running Utes, man, they looked so good in that first half, and I was so excited against Butler, but the post offense and the big men on our team just played terrible basketball, particularly in the second half. And I have no words. You talk about it.
So, have you seen the movie Glory Road?
Huh?
The basketball movie Glory Road. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't.
Okay. The very beginning, he got his team together. It's Texas. It's about the Texas Western Miners, who were the first team to start an all African American lineup, and then they went on to win the national title. But in the very beginning of the movie, he says he is all about fundamental basketball, and he has one of his players show them how to do a layup, a classic layup off the glass. Right? Just put it in a little box. It goes in the hoop. It's a very simple concept. Well, I almost feel like that's what this post offense, like just the post play in general needs. Like Colette, Jace Johnson, Tyler Rawson, like they are not finishing. Like they're getting rebounds, which was rebounding was a problem, especially against UNLV. But they're getting rebounds and they're putting them back up. And then like, it's just like they can't get it to go in the hoop. It's honestly, that's what lost in the game. But I correct myself. That is part of what lost in the game. The other thing that cost them the game, I bet you could guess what it is, and we've talked about it multiple times already. It's turnovers. The game was tied. They turned over the ball four times. I mean, it's 39-39. It's a tie ball game. And then they turn over it like four straight times, I believe. And Butler gets 11 points off of that. I mean, it's just like, I'm sorry. Like, you just can't. It's almost like this running Utes team, or a Larry Koskoviak coached running Utes team, to be able to be extremely successful, has to get like gigantic leads so that when they have their turnover spurt, keep them up in the top 100s of turnovers in the nation. Like, well, what is it? What is it? They're ranked like the top 200s, I think it was, when we were looking at last. But like, for them to keep that average 200 plus turnovers in ranking, you know, they're going to do that every game. So they just need to get a bigger lead. But it was infuriating. It's, you know, not taking care of the ball.
He has to recognize that that is a serious weakness in whatever he's doing to coach, and he has to bring somebody in who can
a fresh set of eyes, something,
and for how to fix it, or who can actually coach these kids on not turning the ball over, because nobody, I mean, it, like we went through the numbers last week, or maybe it was the week before, but it has been a huge, huge problem for the Rutted Utes. Ever since Koskoviak got here, it hasn't changed. It's not going to change this year. And if it were to change, the Utes would be perennial Pac-12 contenders without any increase in talent.
And yep. I mean, here's my question.
It's not okay to just leave it lie and say, well, what can you do? I think that that's just not an acceptable answer to this problem.
I guess here's my homework assignment for you, because you're more the stat man and found this great turnover stat that we were using 2 weeks ago. My question is, if you compare, how does Utah compare to all the other Pac-12 schools and the other, you know, blue blood classical programs? Because, you know, maybe we're wrong. Maybe turnovers isn't a huge deal if you're a big pro. Maybe it's just dynamic talent.
Are you saying I got to check my base rate? It sounds like something I would think.
I don't know.
You're right, and I will look into it.
I don't know. I will say this, though.
Astute observation.
There's one thing that has been cemented in my opinion, and for Utah Jazz fans, I feel Donnie Tillman this season will be the equivalent of what Donovan Mitchell has become for the Jazz. He's just dynamic player. He finishes around the hoop.
He's amazing.
Athletic. He's got the toughness. He's got the right attitude. He's got everything Utah sports fans in general, like, just that attitude, grit factor.
And playmaking ability. He just does things sometimes where you go, how did you do that? How did the ball get from where you are to in that hoop? It's amazing some of the ways that he could score. And I asked Coach K who the next NBA guy was. And he singled out Gabe Beal as the leader of the team, and I think there's a lot of truth to that. But it's obvious from watching these games. The next youth player who is going to have an NBA career is absolutely Donnie Tillman. He's an NBA guy. And I'm looking forward. I don't think he'll leave after a year, but I'm looking forward to see what he does 4 years here and then has a good healthy career in the NBA if he stays healthy.
Look, if he's an NBA guy and you don't think he's leaving this year, then it's after his sophomore season. Like, he won't make it to his sophomore year.
That's a big possibility. I think next year could be a really good year for the youth. The thing to remember when you're watching this team play is this is the superstructure of a basketball team. This is the pillars and the posts and the beams of a basketball team. But the good stuff is coming in. Utah has finally put together a real recruiting class. With some really good players who we expect to play next year, who are all having excellent final seasons wherever they are. Some big, some little guys, some medium-sized guys, like through the whole spectrum. And I think when these guys are playing, are filling roles rather than running the show and trying to create and emphasize the unique talents and the high-level skill sets that are coming in next year. I think it's going to be a really, really good group and one to get excited for. I will not guarantee a national championship the way I just did for youth football, but I'm excited. I think this year is going to be good. I think the youths have an outside shot at making the tournament. Honestly, I think they needed to beat Butler. I think that probably hurt the significant percentage of their ability to make the tournament went away when they lost to Butler last night. But next year is a very, very exciting year for those teams.
Well, I'll correct you. I think you have – so, one, I get more into recruiting with basketball because, you know, I mean, only five players on the court, one player can change everything. Look at Thon, right? Look at Pirtle, look at Kuzma. Like, there's – like – those players, when they're on the floor, they change the game. So just like Donnie Tillman is this year. So it's really intriguing to see what happens next year. I would put my year to watch the Utes, really, maybe, yeah, next year, but the year after, right? So that 2019 season, really, is going to be the season to watch. Because this year, you know, they're going to probably be middle of the Pac-12 NIT bid. Next year, hopefully they move into the upper echelon of the Pac-12 a little bit with an increase in talent and whatnot.
If you're staying fun. I think it's a fun product, and I'm having fun watching them. And they're frustrating.
Oh, I agree.
But I think they'll be competitive in lots of their basketball games, and it's totally going to be worth watching. But if you're wondering, well, you know, when's the next Sweet 16 year? It's next year. That's the year where that kind of aspiration is in reach. And this year, even if they squeak into the tournament, it's not like they're going to make the Elite Eight. You know, they'll be in and out pretty fast. But it'd be cool to go.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one thing, at least according to the announcers last night, and to some extent I agree with them, is this team does get better throughout the season. Chris Dobiak is a good coach. As much as turnovers are pissing us off right now, he is a good coach, and his team will improve. I guess the one final thing, I meant to mention this earlier, is I am concerned about David Collette. Not just because he only scored 6 points against Butler, but I'm concerned because there is a growing trend in his game log. And maybe it's small sample size, maybe I shouldn't care. I don't know. He's averaging around 20 to 25 minutes a game typically against all the opponents, with the exception of like Ole Miss, he played 26. Everything else is, you know, those low 20s range. And, you know, it's been a lot of easy opponents, so you would expect less minutes. So let's just go with this. So 17 points. This is starting from the beginning of the season. 8 points, 17 points, 13 points, 9 points, 24 points, 16 points, 6 points. Like, are we going to have a big spike and then he's just going to be, like, should we just be expecting him to have a big game and then for the most part, he's going to be a mid-level scorer, and Donnie Tillman's going to be the leading scorer for the Utes this year? Because that is kind of what I'm thinking is happening.
The leading scorer for the Utes. I think that Collette is going to be able to score more or less at will in the absence of an elite big man to stop him. The sort of outlier in these statistics is against Missouri, where he actually had a really good game. But if you remember, that was the day after Missouri's projected number one overall draft pick announced that he had back problems and he wound up needing surgery and he's out for the season. But that was expected to be a matchup against a big that just didn't happen, and Missouri was kind of scrambling. And that's the only good game he's had against good competition. Even there, he went 5 of 13. I mean, he wasn't an efficient player. He got 17 points. But I'm looking at his against Power 5 opponents. Let's see, he's 9 of 25 from the field in the three Power 5 opponents that he was in. And that's not good enough. And I think what that suggests is that when he can outsize and outmuscle a guy, he's doing really well. But when he's up against somebody who he's got to deploy more advanced skill set, he's just not succeeding. I think Larry's got to look at maybe some different lineups and a different approach, because whatever Collette had last year, I'm not seeing it happen. And it's not like Cedric, where it's more about shots not falling, kind of weird stuff happening, and I feel like he's going to hit his stride eventually. I worry that this is David Collette this year, and that he's a puzzle that the teams with good bigs have solved, and that he's going to continue to come up short, so to speak. He is 6'10".
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I mean, the season is still young. Conference play inches closer. Next up for the Utes is Utah State on Saturday, so we'll see how they do against an in-state rival, who's, I imagine, going to be pretty intense
to
play.
That next Saturday, so that should be fun. Always fun to get punched in the eye or the neck.
Throat punch on the way. We'll see. Hopefully it's not as bad as it's been, because, I mean, I don't know what kind of safety gear we need. Hashtag safety first, right?
Hashtag safety first.
This is probably one of our longest podcasts in a while. We had a lot to say, but if you are liking the show, please go give us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play. Rate us. If you don't like it, or there's something we could do better, except maybe outside of replacing the host, because we aren't going to go anywhere, email us, utalk@gmail.com, or DM us on Twitter, utalk at utalkpodcast. Those algorithms help us just like algorithms help us analyze these teams. So with that being said, go Utes.
Go Utes.
Thanks for listening to U Talk, brought to you by the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Find us on Twitter at U Talk Podcast or email at utalk@gmail.com.